You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hello, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world. We're with you every weekday before 10:30. Well, at least that's the plan. And we've arrived, would you believe it, at episode 31. It's Wednesday, August the 12th. And we've also arrived at the announcement of racing's worst kept secret, something we discussed on this podcast a couple of times last week. A new British Horse Racing Authority chief executive, now named as Julie Harrington, who will succeed Nick Rust on January the 4th, 2021. Now, in a moment, I'll be discussing Julie's appointment with one of the people she'll have to work most closely with, the chairman of the Horsemen's Group and BHA board director Charlie Parker. There's a massive amount in her in-tray. But one distraction that might not be there, at any rate, is Phoenix Thoroughbreds, who, after a sustained campaign from the Racing Post underlining their founder's alleged involvement in cryptocurrency fraud and money laundering, have chosen to halt operations in the UK. Now, I discussed this with Dave Yates yesterday, and I'm going to do so again shortly with Rishi Persad. But Rishi, first of all, the appointment of Julie Harrington, what do you think should be at the top of her agenda?
My goodness, Nick, take your pick. It is a huge selection for her to choose from. I think the first thing to say is that I think it's a really positive appointment. She's clearly aware of the challenges of the industry, having worked for Northern Racing as a BHA board member, obviously her time at British Cycling and the FA. She's got a fantastic CV. Being aware of what the challenges are in racing, the fact that she's chosen to accept the challenge, I think is a huge positive. In the immediate future, her first challenge will be being responsible for bringing racing back on an even keel after the COVID crisis, even if there is such a thing as an even keel in racing. But the problem with the COVID crisis, Nick, I think, is that it's exposed racing's frailties to the point where, as you mentioned a couple of weeks ago on this very podcast, that we are seemingly on the brink. Therefore, all the while, the BHA, obviously now under Nick Rust and then under Julie Harrington, while they attempt to steady the ship, they're doing so against the issues of prize money, funding, governance, welfare, well-being, diversity, and inclusion, which hang over the sport like a multi-bladed sword of Damocles. And all the while, it's against a backdrop of opposing sides and fractured relationships. Having said all that, I think the hardest thing that she will have to do is convince the sport that we need to buck up our ideas with regards to welfare, integrity, diversity, and inclusion in particular, and also convince those outside the sport that we are conscious, we in the sport are conscious of the issues in the industry of improving our perception or the people's perception of things like welfare and integrity and diversity and inclusion, and that we can all work together within the sport to make those things better. So it's a double-edged sword in that respect, convincing people within the sport and convincing people outside the sport that what the BHA are doing and what she's going to lead is the right path.
Well, I've been talking to the chairman of the Horsemen's Group, the president of the Racehorse Owners Association, and a man in those roles with a seat on the board of directors of the BHA, someone with whom Julie Harrington will have to work very closely. He's Charlie Parker. I began by asking him what he made of the new appointment.
Well, as you say, I wasn't involved in the process, but I wish her all the best of luck. Reading the paper this morning, she's been welcomed with open arms by the likes of Hugo and Nick Rust, obviously. So, I wish her the best of luck. She's got a very large in-tray and some massive issues to deal with. But I think if we can all work together, hopefully we can make some progress.
You are essentially running one of the key operations that form one of the two stakeholders of the British Horse Racing Authority. What do you think is her biggest task?
I think defining the role of the BHA going forward. I mean, I think they've opened many different projects, many different fronts. And when coronavirus hit, obviously the focus then became get racing going safely, and then eventually, hopefully, the return of crowds. And I think a lot of those major projects have had to be put on the back burner. And I don't necessarily think that it should be that what once things improve, that they just return to those projects. I think an overarching view of what are the priorities and where the BHA sits needs to be established before going ahead and tackling 12 different projects all at once.
So it's a question of defining the BHA and defining the BHA's role. So for you, what is their role?
Well, I think foremost, it's a regulatory body. It's race fixtures, it's race planning, and it's the regulation of the rules of British racing. That's how I see it. And it's for the two stakeholders, the courses and the horsemen, to come together and set the more strategic agendas for British racing around finances, around how it's operated, and for the regulator to regulate the rules that the stakeholders set. That's how I would see it.
But given your earlier comments, surely the BHA and the new chief executive have a responsibility to make sure those two stakeholders work together, which is not something we've seen in evidence in the last 6, 12, 15 weeks.
No, I think they're part of it. I mean, it is tripartite, but I think the agenda has to be set by the two stakeholders. And I think we can work together. I think we've had some pretty good discussions over the last few weeks. I think we recognise the difficulties that courses have, but we also recognise where the opportunities lie in terms of improving revenues through betting, through media rights. And I think there's cause for some optimism there. But, you know, reading the paper this morning, the worst recession since 2009. You know, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be really difficult. But I think we can work together, and then the BHA can effectively apply the rule book.
Do you think it's fair to say, and I think we've seen this with Nick Ross to a certain extent, that the BHA chief executive is expected to put her or his head above the parapet when it comes to big industry matters, yet they don't have that commercial heft or level of responsibility to really be able to speak with the authority that is demanded of them sometimes?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think that's absolutely right. And I think that has caused some frustration in the past, not only from Nick himself, but from his team, his executive team, that they feel that they're not necessarily empowered to do the role that perhaps they're expected. But I think we need to change that, and we need to set the agenda, set the strategy, and take the flak if necessary, and let them do their job.
So you would be happy to take a bit more flak than perhaps some of your predecessors have?
I guess so. It's a strange thing to say, isn't it? But yeah, I guess so. If you know, if that is the role we're in, if we are leading the industry, and the two stakeholders are working together, then if we get stuff wrong, then yeah, obviously. But we need the tools to be able to do that. I mean, the Horsemen's Group at the moment is completely unfunded. There's no money. There's no executive function. So at the moment, it's quite difficult to make real progress other than the goodwill of the people on that board. But I think if we can change that and we can fund it properly, which we can, then I think we can lead, and then we can take responsibility, yes.
But let's go back to Julie's role, because she is going to be the figurehead, and certainly she is going to be the point of contact for people in the wider media who want to talk about horse racing and to talk about horse racing's place in society. Where is her role in welfare, in promoting diversity in the sport, in making the sport a fairer and better place?
Yeah, I think those are areas that they have to take responsibility for, and you know, I think those areas are on the agenda. The Horse Welfare Board was set up and produced their 100-page report just before COVID. I know there's a lot of work going on diversity, and then there's the mental health issues surrounding all the staff within the industry. And I think they are the roles that they can lead on and can be seen to be the figurehead. We have to look at our own different representatives and do our own work in those same areas. But as an industry as a whole, I think they have to lead on those issues, definitely.
So you see yourselves and the racecourse is trying to manage the finances of the sport, but that there is a clear governing role for the BHA as well as that regulatory role that you set out at the beginning of the interview.
Yeah, definitely. It is incumbent upon the racecourse and the horsemen's group to generate the right financial playing field, which can attract the right number of owners, trainers, jockeys, stable staff, and then the product itself in terms of the horses and the betting medium that generates the revenues. You know, I think that's definitely our section of the industry, and I think the BHA and Julie can focus on obviously regulations, the fixtures, etc., the race planning, but also the human and horse welfare issues that go with it.
Do you find it slightly odd that even though Julie Harrington has been a senior executive within a major racecourse group and has up until just a year or so ago been a non-executive director of the BHA, there are still people in the sport suggesting that she's somewhat of an outsider?
I think the way racing set up and the communities where the trainers live in Newmarket, Lambourne, etc., I think there's always going to be a feeling that if you're not completely plumbed in and plugged in, that you are something of an outsider. And I know that people have expressed that opinion. As I say, I've not met Julie. I don't know her at all, so I don't have an opinion as to what her experience and knowledge of our great industry is, so I couldn't say, but I can see why people would have that view, definitely.
Given that it's you that's got to be working alongside her very closely in a key position over the next few years, do you not think you ought to have been on that nominations committee?
Yeah, I think possibly, yeah. I mean, Nick Cooper was the outgoing and he was on that noms committee, but you know, they did it properly. There wasn't any discussion outside of the committee, certainly not with me. So yeah, I think it's a bit peculiar, but it's happened that way and we move on and we wish her the best of luck.
Well, lots of interesting content upon which to reflect there. But Rishi, the one thing that struck me was Charlie Parker's recognition that unless you happen to have been born and grown up in Lambourne or Newmarket, there are always some sections of horse racing that are going to see you as an outsider. I don't think this is an appointment of an outsider at all.
No, I agree. I don't think it's an appointment of outsider at all. She is someone who clearly has racing very close to her heart. But I do accept what he says. There is a certain element. I mean, you and I both know, Nick, we've been involved in racing for a very long time. And from our own anecdotal experience, we can attest to the fact that despite the fact that we have been lovers of the sport and involved in the sport for a very, very long time, there are times when you feel like you are treading on someone else's turf. And I think that Julie Harrington will certainly be aware of that sort of attitude that is somewhat prevalent within the sport still. And it's not as inclusive as it should be. And that's a drum that I think a lot of people are hopefully beginning to beat in a positive way now.
Let's talk a little about Phoenix Thoroughbreds. This has been a sustained and, it appears, effective campaign by Pete Scargill and the Racing Post, and they have announced their intention to halt proceedings in the UK. What do you make of this?
Well, so much of it remains full of questions needing to be answered, and that's obviously the angle that the Racing Post have come from. And in fairness to the Racing Post, they have for a very long time sought answers to those questions. I mean, you did an excellent interview yourself with Amir Abdulaziz on Lock on Sunday, where he sort of danced around the subject somewhat. I think that the hardest part about this is that Phoenix taking the attitude of, right, well, we're going to withdraw from the UK. It's the collateral damage that's involved, the trainers that's involved, that are involved in looking after their horses. We know how precarious things are at the moment for a lot of people in the industry, and to have an owner with the size of Phoenix, not as powerful as they were perhaps a few years ago, but still with a significant force in racing now, to take that away, to take that income away from those trainers in particular, it's a bit of a blow. But is it for the best? I don't know. I think we have to wait and see how it unfolds.
It's surely encouraging that we as a journalistic body are examining the credentials of people to see whether they should be fit and proper persons to own racehorses or be involved in the sport. Now, is that something we should equally apply to other major ownership groups?
I think that's only fair. I think it is fair that it applies to everyone. I don't see why it should apply to certain individuals, certain organizations. There ought to be a fit and proper examination for anyone who wishes to be involved financially in the sport, whatever their level. And I think that's the only way that we can move forward.
We, of course, will move forward as a sport into an excellent week next week when we're on the Knavesmire. Some of us very fortunate enough to be on the Knavesmire for 4 days at York. What are you looking forward to most?
Well, the two races that really stand out for me, obviously, Lucky, are the Judmon International. Gay have taken on a host of potential, obviously, Lord North has already proved himself and whoever else turns up from the Coolmore team. But the race that I think probably just edges it might be the Nunthorpe. Batash taking on the two-year-old Golden Pal, Art Power, Ali chucking a couple of others. And I confess that yesterday I actually backed Golden Pal. Anti-post. I don't normally get involved too much anti-post, especially in a race like the Nunthorpe, but I back Golden Pal. The more I look at that race at Ascot, the more I think he's even better, much better than that. I'm just hoping for fast ground on the Knavesmire, because I think a flat five on the Knavesmire might see something special from that two-year-old.
I must mention the racing in France this weekend as well, because I just spare a thought for David Egan. David Milnes, the Racing Post Newmarket correspondent, has talked to him this morning. He's not able to go to France to ride Mishriff again. It's a great job he's got with Prince Faisal. This is a serious horse who's off to the Guillaume Dornano at Deauville.
Well, I have to give you a pat on the back. I think earlier on in the season, you've been banging the drum of Mishriff. And he has certainly lived up to the expectations that you placed on him. I think you obviously saw him in Saudi Arabia earlier on in the season. And back on familiar turf over in the UK, he certainly excelled this season. He's a tremendous racehorse. And I really want to see him tested. I'd love to have seen him on the Knavesmire in the Judmon International. I'd love to have seen him. I think the race would have really shown us what he's capable of. So exciting. Shame for David Egan. Exciting what he's possibly still capable of. But obviously the Jacques Lemarois with Palace Pier, one of my favourite horses. Even though he broke my heart, John Gosden broke my heart by not running him in the Guineas. I cannot wait to see him in what looks a fantastic race on the weekend.
Now, Racing Welfare is set to host a virtual Yorkshire Open Day on Sunday the 13th of September. The showcase of racing in Yorkshire is being held in place of Middleham and Malton Open Days, which have been hugely popular in recent seasons and have had to be cancelled this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Tim Fitzgerald is the Vice Chairman of the Malton Open Day Committee and a pillar of the Malton community and joins me now. Tim, it's really encouraging that you can at least do something, and this is a super idea.
Well, yeah, we just wanted to do something really, because nothing was happening with the open day. We were sort of making provisional plans, and then as the COVID thing developed, we had to pull the plug, and then we saw that Yorkshire Show had done a virtual open day and virtual show day, and Rydale Show were going to try and do the same. So we thought, well, let's try and do it ourselves.
So what can people enjoy if they log on that day? What can they expect?
Well, we're hoping we're going to do some interviews with some trainers and hopefully get one or two horses to follow and do some of the facilities. You know, if somebody's got a John Quinn's got his spa, Brian Ellison's got a seahorse walker, and Richard Fahey's got his treadmills and things like that. Just show the different facilities and the different things that people do to get horses fit, and you know what they would normally see behind the scenes, but they'll see it all online rather than having to go and see it.
And is facilitating that quite challenging, or have you found it quite straightforward so far?
That luckily is not my problem. I just come up with silly ideas, and then somebody else goes, "Oh, yeah, I will have to do that."
And I mentioned you were a pillar of the community. The Fitzgerald family have been synonymous with Moulton for so many years now. What does it mean to you to see people being able to enjoy one of the great training centres?
Well, it's important because, you know, to share what we're lucky to do every day. But, you know, there's a lot of people are interested, and more than you can ever think at times. You know, there's a lot of people follow racing through thick and thin, from the very rich to the not so fortunate. But at least it gives them a bit of pleasure, and if we can do a little bit to help, that's grand.
Tim, thanks so much for talking to me. Best of luck with it.
Thanks, Nick.
That's Tim Fitzgerald, the Vice Chairman of the Moulton Open Day Committee. And Racing Welfare is running a national online auction to assist in the fundraising efforts, which will go live on the 27th of August until the 24th of September. And the lots on offer include a private tour of the National Stud in Newmarket, complete with an overnight stay at the historic Jockey Club rooms and a 2021 share in a racehorse with the Hot to Trot Syndicate. So do get involved in the virtual Yorkshire Open Day on Sunday, the 13th of September. Oh, my thanks to Tim Fitzgerald. And Rishi, it just remains for you to give us a winner for today.
Well, I hope you're going to agree with this selection, Nick. The 455 at Kempton looks a pretty hot novice stakes for the three-year-olds. But I'm going with a horse who ran first time up in that Palace Pier Maiden at Sandown, which has obviously proven to be a great pointer to the future. He ran a race of promise. He's trained by Sir Michael Stout, a son of Frankel. He's called My Frankel. And you were at Leicester when he won, and he beat a couple of useful horses in the Sheikh Hamdan colours, Nazwari and Adab. And he won well. That was over a mile and a quarter, and he was powering away at the end. And I think the step up in trip will really suit him. A lot of his family are rated. His dam was rated over 100. His brother is rated, I think, close to 100. So I think that he could be very good. And I'm hoping that he does the job today at Kempton. Can you remember him winning at Leicester?
I can. It was an unforgettable night. 9 races.
What a memory.
Great memories. Rishi, thank you very much. Thank you for listening. If you do enjoy the show, make sure you tell your friends and then rate, review and subscribe to us on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes or Google. And we'll see you again tomorrow. That was Wednesday, August the 12th. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.